Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, what's going on, man? How are we doing today?
Doing okay. Doing better than Newcastle, apparently. But... Wow. Doing well. We're riding high. Took the goal away from Rashford. It's kind of tough, but you know, he still remains a threat going forward. It's been a fun time. Anyway,
are you talking about the Coco Cup?
The who? Put some respect on the champs. Come on now. But no, doing well, riding relatively high off of a really fun weekend of basketball that they're going to have some thoughts on. We'll dig into that a little bit later. First, some quick news nuggets before we dig into the meat of the podcast. We touched on it on the last one. The Hawks were looking into hiring Quinn Snyder. That is now official. Could make his debut as early as Tuesday against the Washington Wizards, of course. Got to see what the pump fake's hitting for. But a five-year deal, annual worth of about $8 million a year. Steve, any updated thoughts on the Quinn Snyder hire now that it's official?
Well, that is a commitment. 5 years is saying, hey, we really want you here. And that is a bag. So I can understand how this came together quickly. I did find it interesting that they were like, yeah, Kyle Korver was texting Quinn Snyder. And I was like, ah, that's how you get the Zoom interview a day after. I get it. But I'm being respectfully messy. The biggest thing I got from the presser was the quote from Quinn Snyder, in which he said, I think players want to get better. I think players want to get coached. And I think the relationships are what allows you to coach effectively. I think that our group has to decide to trust each other. And that's really the biggest thing for Atlanta. We talked about kind of some of the scheme things that Quinn Snyder can add to it, some of the structure he could add, having multiple guards, having had that experience with the screen and roller, and the opportunity for him to evaluate this roster going into the offseason. The biggest thing is, can you take what's missing and now enhance it? Can you get the buy-in back? And that's the tricky part with not every job, but most of these jobs where this is a team that has success, has a formula, but for some reason, either there's a disconnect or it's not working or one side is lacking. If he could just fix or tweak one thing, they look different. And we know what the Hawks do when they get a new coach. So I'm intrigued to see what it looks like in action, what he tries to get out of this team, what the buy-in is on both ends of the floor and how they move forward.
On the front about the Hawks really turning things up after new coaching hires, got a hearty laugh out of your leaning in the gaming chair with me. Tell some quality stuff. But I'm right there with you. I'm curious to see what kind of buy-in he gets. Also, the Hawks under Joe Prunty, like, just winning games and scoring lots of points, and Trae Young looking good and clapping back at people on Twitter. Like, it's a fun time in Atlanta. So I'm curious to see, like, how Quinn Snyder is able to establish the relationship with Trey. I think it's going to be fun. Like, the relationship between Quinn and Donovan Mitchell was pretty strong. I think that played a big part into the success that they had offensively. And if Quinn's able to get that from Trey, like, we know what kind of talent Trey Young is. At least we all should know what kind of talent Trey Young is. Like, part of the crazy weekend, what goes under the radar, Trey hit his own game winner over the weekend. And so I'm excited, man. The evaluation period is going to be interesting, but if you can snag Quinn Snyder, like, he was before leaving Utah, like, I think he was what, soundly a top 10 coach? Is that fair? It rains. So that would explain why you immediately give him 5 years. I will say, 5 years in the midst of all of the smoke around the locker room and stuff like that kind of feels like a front office line in the sand of sorts. Like, okay, he's going to be here. Like, we had Lloyd early in the career. Nate took over. We didn't give Nate a super long extension. Now we got Quinn. Quinn got five. So, like, if there is beef, we have a common denominator now, if I can be respectfully messy for a bit. But, like, that's also what the 5 years felt like to me, in addition to Quinn just being good at his job. So interesting stuff happening in Atlanta. We'll see. Other news nuggets before we go. Bucks co-owner Mark Larcy to sell his portion of the team to Jimmy and Dee Haslam of the Cleveland Browns. I think that's going for $3.5 billion. Lots of money.
Hey, man, the price is going up. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but golly.
No, you're not wrong.
The business of basketball versus the discourse of basketball. Very interesting. We could talk about that at a later date.
So let's just call it a wide spectrum. on the Kings front, they did waive KZ Akpala, who's currently out with injury.
What was KZ Akpala's final record as a starter for the Kings?
Ah, I see.
If I go back to the preseason thread that you had, where you said the Sacramento Kings are blah, blah, blah with KZ Akpala starting. Well, what did that end up at? Where's that at? Then the dark web, where'd that go?
Is that in the dark web? Well, in the preseason, as Mike Brown was trying to establish the defensive identity of this team, you know, they were winning a bunch of games. They started the regular season with KZ as a starter. They lost their first three games. So I don't want to talk about it. I hope that KZ. I hope KZ is okay. I do like the PJ Dozier flyer. Give him another defender on the wing. We'll see how much playing time he actually gets. But get well soon, KZ. Steve, you didn't have to twist the knife. It's fine.
I'm sorry.
For the Charlotte Hornets, Bryce McGowan was on a two-way deal. He got a four-year deal worth a little over $7 million. Team option in the last deal. I've been intrigued by some of the playmaking flashes from him. Here to see what kind of on-ball reps he gets moving forward. It is a pretty deep guard room in Charlotte, but he shows some good things. Bigger guard, smooth play, smooth operator in ball screens. I am excited. Do you have Bryce McGowan thoughts?
No.
Okay. Well, then in that case, we can transition to the weekend. Steve, we witnessed the second highest scoring game in NBA history. And we probably don't get there without whatever the last 3.5 minutes of that fourth quarter was. But a lot of buckets. Kawhi had one heck of a game. Paul George had one heck of a game. De'Aaron Fox had one heck of a game, closed the door. Malik Monk, 45 points off the bench, including a three off of a hammer to send the game into overtime originally. We were watching this during our online watch party with Playback, Rock with us folks. But I guess zooming out now, like, what were your thoughts of the game? What stood out to you outside of the insanity of it?
Well, the biggest thing is the insanity. Like, Nikias, did you ever watch Tiger King? No. Has anyone ever tried to explain that show to you?
Yes.
It didn't hit, did it?
It did not, no.
Kings Clippers was the Tiger King of basketball. You were there every week, and you get it, and you can talk about it with the people who saw it. You cannot explain that basketball game to anyone who didn't see it. If they just saw the box score, they'd be like, what is this? And that's going to be it. That's the end of the conversation. As far as pure thoughts, I thought we got a lot of answers when it comes to Russell Westbrook. As far as what that's going to be, I know I'm still in the minority. I think his paint touches matter. I think the context is still a little bit different with this Clipper team, with the way that Kawhi and Paul George like to operate. You did get a dose of what it looks like when teams decide, hey, we're going to double off of Russ. But you also saw the plays where it really didn't matter where he stood because they were going to go get a bucket anyways. Mm-hmm. So how do they navigate that? How do they use him? But when he has that kind of blend, he's able to get those paint touches for a team that struggled in that area. I think it does have a little bit of juice, has a little bit of pop. As far as the overall game, Sacramento did the thing. Look.
I love the description already.
Well, but we don't get there. Like, this is the thing. It's all sorts of takes flying back and forth. The Clippers were up 9 and then turned the ball over 87 times in a row to the point where I posted a sequence of 2 straight turnovers, and as I was posting it, they did it again. And I was like, all right, you know what? I give up. I quit.
Oh, this what y'all on? Okay.
But we were able to see Russ have an impact as a screener. We were able to see Russ open things up for Plumlee rolling. Like, those little things kind of add up. And in totality, it's a reminder, the Clippers, again, it's a bonus. Because even before they made this move, they like Eric Gordon with that closing unit. So we can do the Russ thing, but we don't have to do the Russ thing. We can just do something else. We saw that in the Denver game. So that's where I was just kind of like, I think I get it. You know, let's get Terrence Mann, have him do what he did with the second unit, and then we can blend and match however we need to. What were your thoughts? I mean, I'm trying to wrap that game up in my head.
It was a lot of fun. And it's like, to your original point about, if you just look at the box score, you're probably asking, what is this? I think the immediate thought was like, bring me back to the days where defense were played or whatever. But if you watch that game, it didn't feel like bad defense was being played. Like, it was a lot of incredible shot making. Also, the tempo of that game was absurd. Like, that's the biggest thing. And I think just in general, if you want to zoom out to like using pace adjusted stats or something, we're not going to get deep into that convo. But like, this is the kind of game that exemplifies why that matters. Because it, after made baskets, immediate outlet, getting to the rim, kick, drive, kick, shot. It goes in, or it's a board, and it's a fast break opportunity. It's just, it was insane to watch. It was insanely fun to watch. We had a lot of fun just in general enjoying the game. But you've already hit on most of the Russ points I wanted to hit, just the usage, where they spaced them, was spaced in the strong side corner sometimes to kind of minimize things. They used them as an on and off ball screener, which intrigued me. Sadly, did not see much of the screening in the Nuggets game. So we'll keep an eye on what the use is going to be there. But it was encouraging to see first game, hey, we are willing to do this, or he is willing to. So keep an eye on that. He really picked the spots. And I think for anyone that had hesitations about the Russ signing, and it was very fair and valid to have those concerns, like, the first game should have been like, okay, he can do it. May just be, I just got here vibes, but he can do it. Like, he very much moved the ball. He brought it up, swung it to Kawhi. If that was part of the play call, kind of spaced and got where he needed to, whether that's going to the corner or going to the dunker spot and lurking around. If he was spaced and teams helped off of him, he was immediately making the next pass as the Kings were rotating and creating open shots that way. It wasn't anything like super flashy, but to showcase like he can work within that system. The context is better for him. It should be easier for him to make positive plays within this context. So I was mostly impressed by what he looked like offensively. Defensively, there were some lapses. And like, through two games, I think that's probably the biggest issue that I have with him, that the defense has not been great. Which is also why I'm kind of encouraged by the fact that I think the defense in the Nuggets game was worse than the defense we saw from him in the Kings game. But in that Nuggets game, we saw more Terrence Mann. We saw more Eric Gordon. Like that we saw very early on, Ty Lue's like, hey, if Russ is playing well, I will close with him. If Russ is not doing what I need from him, or if these other guys are playing better, those guys will play ahead of him. And I think as long as that remains consistent, I won't say there's no downside to the move, but it certainly minimizes, I think, what the downside could be, if that's just going to be understood and that's just how it's going to play out.
I'm with you there. And then I also think, and I'd be remiss, kind of an important win for the Kings. Their whole story this season has been, hey, we do this and we do this very well and we're going to try defensively. And they did that. Like, they just never stopped playing. And that's the one thing you kind of keep waiting for. Okay, when is it going to catch up to Sacramento? When is the movement going to slow down a little bit? When's the tempo going to take a hit? When's the belief going to take a hit? And we're almost at the stretch where it's like, there's only so many games left. This is their identity. It works or it doesn't. But we still go hoop. And so I kind of like them being able to take those shots and bounce it right back at the Clippers in a wild way.
Wild way indeed. Also, I would just add, the Sacramento Kings not only have the highest offensive rating in the NBA, they currently have the highest offensive rating in NBA history, which feels like they are the 15 to hold that title at some point this season.
Wait a minute.
Go ahead. You're
shifting this to the Kings now?
It's the fact. I don't know what you want me to do.
You spent 3 months telling me how the Celtics had it. Then who else did you mix in there?
The Celtics had it, and then they stopped making threes, and then the Nuggets had it. The Nuggets no longer have it. Sacramento Kings currently have it. So I think it's fair to Rick. So to bounce off of your point about we're going to do this thing very well, they are quite literally doing it better than anyone ever has in NBA history.
Oh man. This man, you are buying the gift card that goes to like six different restaurants. That's what you are doing.
This is the Amazon gift card. You simply
Hey, you choose one of these. Hey,
here's Amazon. You want a book? Sure. You want some electronics? Sure. You need clothes? Sure. Gallon water jugs? Sure. Notebooks? Get what you need. Here's $100 on Amazon. That's all it is. In a much lower scoring game on Saturday, Celtics Sixers, in which I start with a very simple question. Like, can the Sixers beat the Celtics?
It seems like no, and then it seems like yes, and it seems like no. And that to me is kind of one of my overall things with Philadelphia, because even during this stretch, even during that game, you're starting to see more and more. Okay, I could see the infrastructure. I could see the activity defensively. I could see Harris and Melton and Tucker working and Embiid helping. I could see the matchup between Horford and Embiid, but them trying to pick their spots. Okay, we're going to try and have them face up at the elbow. We're going to move them to the post. We're going to go to Harden and Embiid pick and roll. And they navigate their success, and then it just kind of stops. Then it picks back up, then it kind of stops. And that's kind of the fun part of this second part of the season, where you're starting to see, okay, these teams are good. How good are they against this? Mm-hmm. And so now it's like, okay, who wants to see who? Even going to the Western Conference, I know we're not even talking about that game, but you have Memphis going at Denver.
Got them out the paint real quick.
And then Denver going at the Clippers. And it's like, oh, buddy, this is going to be matchup based. I think Philadelphia can. The key is there's just not much of a margin for error, I would say. Like, they defensively, they can't have any breakdowns. And they have to have Embiid going. And they got to continue to play with purpose. And that's what has to happen. Their defense has to show up. If they can't get Boston into semi rock fight, now it's like, where are we going from here? Do you think they can, or am I thinking too much about the second and third quarter run?
No, like, I think they can. I think they showcase, like, they have the formula to do so. Like, there's enough, like, what I've seen from Joel Embiid defensively over the last month plus, like, his very presence allows Philadelphia to just wall off the. And I think for a team like Boston, who has increased their movement, they're just super talented, super smart, super deep. But a lot of it is still we get the pin downs off ball. We want to get downhill. We want to make your deep. And I think Joel Embiid is a presence that makes them kind of second guess that. Like, okay, how deep can this paint touch be? Can we actually get to the line to supplement some of the jump shooting? And so, like, they feel like, on paper at least, they feel like a nice stylistic clash to what Boston wants to do. Like, I don't think they don't have the perimeter defenders to really thwart Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown consistently, though Jason Tatum did not have a great game. Shot was not falling for him. Some of the decision-making also wasn't good. And so Philly did a good job on Saturday. I want to give them credit there. I think just looking at it on paper, like, do they have a Tatum guy? Like, I don't know. Like, we saw some Tobias Harris on Jaylen Brown. We had De'Anthony Melton on Jason Tatum very early on. It just felt like, okay, there are areas that either of those guys can get attacked by either of those stars. So there isn't comfort there, but just in terms of the type of shots they can force Boston into, it vibes pretty well. And Joel Embiid, at least through the first three quarters, he did not care what you threw at him. Al Horford, you tried your best, and honestly, mostly did a good job. It did not stop Joel Embiid from getting to his mid-range jump. It did not stop him from putting Al Horford underneath the basket a couple of times. The rare occasion we saw Robert Williams on him did not stop Joel Embiid from getting to his spot. And so when you have someone that can just dictate terms to that degree and can do so in the paint as well, like, I feel like they have a pathway to doing so. I do wish, you talked about the run in the second half, it would help if the guard play was a little bit better for Philadelphia in this game. It felt like an inconsistent game for James Harden. Poor Tyrese Maxey just didn't have it really on either end. And so to that point, like, if you are projecting forward a series between those two, like, how much better does it get stylistically for Tyrese Maxey? I'm not sure. I do think there's room for both of those guys to play better. But, like, I don't know how big the advantages will be for those two. But even with that, the fact that they got that kind of guard play and they were still right there, and if there was an extra like 6/10 of a second left, they probably end up playing overtime because of the ridiculous Embiid shot after the Jason Tatum three. Like, I don't think they're far off. I think there are some advantages. They can get to the rim. They can get to the free throw line in a way that I don't know what Boston can against Philly consistently. But there's some stuff to sort out with, I guess, just in terms of the guard production and also the second unit in general. Because I think that's really what bites Philadelphia in a matchup like this. Once Embiid goes off the floor, even in that game, once Embiid went off the floor, it was like, okay, how are we generating good offense while Boston still can stagger the way that they have, or they just have a deeper roster they can throw out there with the second unit.
No, I feel you. Can we talk about Boston's defense in this game, though?
We can.
Like, I know the cool rage is no one plays defense in the NBA anymore and no one tries anything. Do you understand how many things Boston threw at Philadelphia?
The sink.
Like, literally, they toggled through so many different coverages, which is why I don't have necessarily the numbers to back it up, but Boston's defense is terrifying in a playoff setting. They literally went, okay, Harden, Embiid, pick and roll. We're just going to try and keep it on this side so you can't roll to the other side. You're going to roll towards the help, and Harden hits Embiid, Embiid hits Tobias Harris. It's a three. So the next time, they're like, we're just going to switch, and we're going to double you. And, you know, we're going to let Al play straight up. But also, we're going to send help if you face up and drive. And then if you post up, we're just going to double from two passes away. Like, we're just going to throw different things at you to keep you out of rhythm. And that's the fun part. And that's what we need to recognize more of with these teams. Like, it's not like they're not trying to do things defensively. It's just we've reached an era where more of it is, hey, let's try and just keep you out of rhythm and make it tough, as opposed to the loud, we're just trying to take everything away, here's five people right in front of your face type deal. Yeah. Because that was what impressed me the most. An end of rant.
No, I think that's a good point. Like, one of the things I noted early on as Embiid was getting off to the strong start, like, as you mentioned, like, Boston was throwing help in different coverages, different ways, but like, there were still a lot of possessions where it felt like on the catch, at least, Embiid had space to work with. So there was still a trust factor for Boston. Like, okay, we can thwart him. And if necessary, we will adjust. And to Boston's credit, they did adjust and just, you know, did just enough to kind of throw off the timing for Embiid. I think there was, what, in the fourth quarter, there was a two turnover and two possession stretch for him. Very untimely to help keep that run going for Boston that it made in the second half. And to Philadelphia's credit, they bounced right back to the lead back late in that fourth quarter. Like, it was just a fun game between two elite basketball teams. And I understand both sides of the feeling there after that game, where it's like, hey, we didn't have our best stuff, particularly from our second and third best players, and we were right there. And Boston can say, hey, we absorbed all these blows from Joel Embiid. Jason Tatum could not hit anything. The possession before he hits what turned into the game winner, he took a three off the side of the backboard. That's the kind of night he had, and we still won. And so just any kind of tweaks from either side can kind of tilt this thing. I would like to see them play again. Like, you can sign me up for a series of that. Like, that just feels like a fun chess match between those two. I had some fun with it. I guess keeping it east. On Sunday, we did have a matchup between the Milwaukee Bucks and the Phoenix Suns. No Giannis, no KD, but
you
still an entertaining.
You're still gonna do this, aren't you?
What does that mean?
Man, Bucks Suns play each other. Now we gotta talk about it. Let's talk about Chris Paul with 18 points on 18 shots and Chris Middleton with 11 points on 13 shots.
Sounds like they wanted to win and they wanted to take shots to make sure their team could have more points than the other. Efficiency King Chris Paul said, I don't care about my numbers. I need to make plays for my team. And Chris Middleton, still coming off the bench, doing whatever he can to help push his team forward. A +7 in his minutes, despite not shooting well, by the way. Chris Middleton also making some important plays. This is really about Drew Holiday. This is about the two-way play of Drew Holiday, who hounded Devin Booker all game long. It also knocked down jumper after jumper after converted drive after jumper after converted drive after jumper. This has been arguably the best offensive season of Drew Holiday's. And he has done so mostly without an elite running mate or someone to take ball handling responsibilities off. Obviously, he's playing off of Giannis, but in the perimeter, he hasn't had Chris Middleton a ton. And in this game, he had Chris Middleton, but still coming off the bench, and there was no Giannis. And what Drew has been able to do as a table setter this year, you know my thoughts on some of the decision-making lapses that he has, but overall, it's been really good stuff for him this year. We saw that in this game against him. The pull-ups have not stopped falling for Drew Holiday. And on top of all of that, he's just been the best guard defender in basketball. It has been a joy. It's been a joy 95% of the time to watch Drew Holiday play basketball this year. That 5% is, hey, why'd you take this at 21 on the clock?
Hey, but to get to the 95, you need the 5.
That's true. That is true. You have to withstand the 5 to get the 95. But no, Drew's been incredible. And just the last 2.5 minutes of that game, going back and forth, Brooke hits a 3, Devin Booker hits a tough shot. It's just a back and forth, get it out the mud game between two teams missing their best players. And it just, that was good hoop. I really enjoyed that
one. How did you feel about Milwaukee putting Joe Ingles on Chris Paul?
Well, I mean, putting some length on Chris Paul makes sense. It's not like Joe has to worry about like a bunch of like cutting and off-ball movement with Chris and show some help depending on where he's spaced as well. And with that size, like you could feel comfortable switching some of those ball screens depending on who the partner is. So like I got it from Milwaukee side. I think in terms of the speed between those two, like that's probably your best matchup for Joe Ingles. So I got it.
It was one of the fun little things I had, and I'm glad you mentioned Drew's defense, but it was fun to just watch Phoenix try to figure out Milwaukee's defense and Milwaukee stay committed to what they do, which is basically, hey, you, we're going to be right in your chest, and Brooke's going to be back there, and we're going to navigate the heck out of the screen and stay attached and contest, and here's the space, but we're also here as well. Like, it was very fun early. I think Chris Paul came off a screen, and we've talked about this on the pod for a couple weeks now. Chris Paul hunting for, hey, where's DeAndre Ayton rolling? Oh, you're not giving it to me? I'm going to snake, and now you're going to give me the late switch, and now I'm going to find DeAndre Ayton. And Brooke was like, nope, I'm going to release.
make the pass if you want to, bud.
And I think it was Javon Carter was like, nope, I'm still here. And it's like, oh, well, that's interesting. Devin Booker, just someone attached to his hip. I mean, that's fine. I'm just going right with you. And that's been the fascinating part. I keep waiting for Milwaukee to kind of like get, I don't want to say get cracked, but one time where it's like, is this going to work? And it's like, we still haven't gotten there yet.
I do enjoy the Milwaukee, hey, let me escort you to this phone booth defense. Like, it's very fun. Like, oh, Drew Holiday's going to the bench? That is A-okay. Here's Javon Carter for you. I hope you enjoy your stay. But no, like, it's just a nice battle. Go ahead.
Have you felt about Jay Crowder with Milwaukee so far?
He's mostly slotted in nicely.
Made a couple big threes in the fourth, I'll tell you that much.
That he did. I'll just say on that note, because I'm watching the game, I'm also, like, on the timeline and stuff, and watching some of my son's mutuals to absolutely lose it. Like, not him. Anyone else could hit big shots right now. I'm not trying to deal with this from Jay Crowder.
Y'all sent him home. What you mean? Hopefully everything's all right, but we never got to the bottom of that one.
Yeah, I don't know if we are going to get to the bottom of that one, but no, I got a good kick out of that one. They were not here for Jay Crowder making big plays at all. But no, like I've enjoyed how Jay Crowder slotted in. I will say, like. It popped more so in the Miami game than this one, but you put Jay Crowder in the lineup. Ideally, he's your 4. You're going switch all. Like, if they had Giannis, I would imagine you would see, like, Giannis at the 5, him at the 4, wing it out from there. But watching him navigate in space, you can tell he's still trying to find it. And I think not only is switching going to be ideal when he's in, like, I think that's just going to be his best coverage at this point. Like, I think you started to see some of the slippage with him navigating screens last year, really. And as he works, as he's trying to get his legs back under him, you can definitely see if you're starting with him off the ball, you're running something for his defender, like he can kind of get lost in that. So something to monitor. But as far as finding pockets of space on the offensive end, like hasn't taken much for him to get acquainted to that. And as you said, he's knocked down big shots in Miami game, knocked down some big threes, some contested threes as well. So I think they've gotten pretty much what they've expected from Jay Crowder so far.
I have an unpopular question to ask you.
Okay.
Whose offense is more important for Milwaukee, Drew Holiday or Chris Middleton?
Wow. More important. More important, it might be Drew. But I think he's going to have the ball in his hands more. It's going to be more important for him to make good decisions. Like, even if Chris doesn't have it, he'll be spaced and he accounts for a defender in a way that Drew doesn't. I think probably Drew. You need the shot making from him, the occasional post-ups, the hard drives. You're going to need the shooting for sure. I think I lean Drew.
Okay. I was trying to balance to see who can Milwaukee afford to have struggle in a playoff series. And I was thinking Middleton, because he's not going to stop shooting. He's not going to change the game plan or anything like that. But if Drew takes a step back, then it's like, wait a minute.
what you doing? Let's get these Javon pull-ups. Hey, Joe Ingles, if you can run the set for us, please. comes a little bit different. But no, Drew deserves his flowers. Great game for him. Also, I was just surprised. Maybe that just makes me naive. I was surprised no Chris Middleton in the starting lineup, considering Giannis was out. I thought that would have been the bump. They just kind of went stock. Like, no, we'll roll with Bobby. It's fine. And
I keep telling you, they are keeping this man. You are on the plan. Whatever the plan is, we're keeping you on that. We need you. We cannot go backwards.
No, you did indeed say it. Hashtag listen to Steve. So.
Hey, man, I'd just be talking.
Oh, here we go.
I do have a quick question for you, though.
Okay.
Did Jared Vanderbilt's performance against Dallas move you at all?
He was really good. He was really good. Actually, we can talk Dallas Lakers for just a brief moment. The first half of that basketball game, I was like, all right, bet. I can just hop on FIFA for a little bit. I see. The Lakers could not hit literally anything while the Mavericks were hitting just about anything that threw it from the perimeter. I was like, oh, it's going to be one of those. Luka's vibing. Kyrie's vibing. Here comes Tim Hardaway Jr. just flowing into space and knocking down contested shots. All right, that's cool. And you immediately saw the difference in half-court spacing with Dennis Schroeder taking over for the currently injured D'Angelo Russell. It's like, ah, we are back to the phone. That is cool. Okay. Well, that's neat. What resilience from this Lakers team. Some blandness from the Mavericks offensively, and also the defense was hashtag not good, to the point where Jason Kidd was quick to note after the game, hey, I'm just a bystander. I'm watching just like y'all, which problematic, but we will leave that alone. We'll say that for a later date. Incredible resolve from LeBron. Anthony Davis was just a monster on both ends of the floor. That is the Anthony Davis that the Lakers need. A walking mismatch offensively. Can get to the line whenever he wants, can shoot over anyone whenever he wants to. Defensively can just blow stuff up. One of the best games from Anthony Davis this season. This Laker, like the vibe of this Laker team just feels different. What are they, 4-1 now since all of the trades?
Yeah, LeBron liked that trade. It was also very funny to see the Lakers just dip back into, oh, let's set pin downs for Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
That worked 4 years ago. We should finally do that again.
I just imagine like old guy in the personal study, like blowing cobwebs off of a book. I'm like, let me open this up. What did we do during that title year? Oh, okay. We had size and shooting. Oh, okay. Let's make some trades. How do we use this guy that shot 80% in the bubble? Oh, right. We didn't just post him up on the left side of the floor and let him jab at Jay. We had guard screen for him sometimes. Just ran him off some action, got him against a tilted defense, and then he attacked and got to the free throw line like 8 to 10 times because no one could stay in front of him. That's interesting.
Also, Dallas couldn't rebound. Felt like every time they did get a stop, they gave it right back. Were you intrigued at all by the decision to put LeBron in some pick and rolls there in that fourth quarter?
I got a little chuckle out of it.
A little LeBron, come here.
Like, hey, dog, you still got a good golf score. You still in the back nine, though. Yeah.
You said it popped. Come here, buddy.
We about to see if it popped. Oh, man. Also, I heard a pop, stands up, immediately starts getting buckets. I'm just like, okay, wait. I remember this with, like, the ankle injuries. Very much just a running joke. Like, all right, LeBron twists the ankle like 270 degrees. He just ties his shoes and he's okay. I was like, wait a minute. That's not how human bodies are supposed to work. You heard a pop. You had the collective NBA world on pins and needles. He's like, oh, I'm all right. Walks around a little bit, starts jogging, gets an outlet after defense rebound. He's just trotting up the floor. I'm like, oh, so that he's just okay. Like, I'm genuinely glad he's okay, but also, don't scare us like that. You can't say those collection of words together. We know what that means. Don't. We've witnessed too many legends of the sport have that sensation or express that sensation and it be not good. You can't scare the NBA fan base like that. Please, LeBron. I don't ask for much. But you can't do that.
So, whose path are you a little more intrigued in right now? Dallas is at 6, a half game out of the play-in.
Ah,
the Lakers are at 12, a game out of the play-in. Do we get this rematch on a Wednesday, leading into the playoffs?
Oh man, if we can, oh boy, if we get LeBron and Brow versus Luka and Kyrie in a shot making fest late in the game, that's intriguing stuff. Also, while we're adjacent here, I guess. It is a very small sample. Very small sample. I do not think the Mavericks have played poorly in the Kyrie Luka minutes. But like, it feels like they had so much better flow in the first game than they have since then in terms of who's taking what shots and who's leading what possession. Like, is that just me or are you kind of feeling like it just feels like growth isn't linear. It just feels weird right now.
Probably it feels weird because they showed the movement stuff early and then went back to the other side a little bit. Mm-hmm. And there's not the success around it. So we saw in their first game against the Kings, okay, we're going to post Luka against a matchup, put Kyrie one pass away. But again, teams are kind of ready for it. And you got to deal with Vanderbilt and the double team. So it's different if a team rotates. So now it's like, okay, Kyrie's made a quick decision to swing the ball. Oh, we're in the same boat we were in before. We're now, yes, you are scrambling, but who is making you pay? So it's kind of one of those things where they kind of got to figure out on the fly what the mix is going to be and how they're going to keep things up, if that makes sense. And what do you do when you have that level of shot making that you did and then it stops? It's not like you're a defensive juggernaut. So
that they are not.
Kind of like there's a formula for this not to work, if that makes sense. So while the margin of error is different than it was before for Dallas, there's still some elements there. So I think it's probably that would be my first guess.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't tripping because it just felt like this feels more disjointed. Like I would think after the debut, and I guess as a brief aside, debuting your new acquisition against the Kings is just the move, I guess. They are 25th in defensive rating as announced. I guess that just makes it all look, oh, okay, there's more scrambling. That might just be by virtue of what the personnel is and what the scheme is. That might also factor in why I look this way and not the same way against the Lakers, who do different things schematically and also have more length to throw at you. But yeah, it's just been kind of, and I guess the other part of it is that some of the stuff is so loud. Like, I think it's what, the second game with the Kyrie and Luka thing. And they were just passing the ball back and forth, just playing hot potato in the last possession. It's like, that's not what you want. So I don't know. Just monitoring that one. And I guess we can close the weekend off with whatever the heck Damian Lillard is doing right now. 71 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists for Damian Lillard against the Houston Rockets basketball team.
Before you continue, can we not discredit that? We have seen 2 71-point games. I do not want to hear, well, look who they was playing. And no, this is the game now. No deep. That man scored 71 points. It's not easy to do.
It's not. Otherwise, everyone would do it.
Anyways, continue.
No, it's just, it's been an insane 13 threes for Dame. And poor Steven Silas, man. I just feel bad. And I'm trying to stray away from like NBA podcasters, passive aggressive against a bad team. Like, I ain't even trying to do that. Like, I genuinely feel for Steven Silas. Because no matter what he does, there is going to be a, why did you do this? Why are you just now doing this? Why did you do this for this long? If you can do this, why didn't you do this with this player? It's just all bad.
It's a shame, but once you get cooked, you're unfortunately just cooked. Like, it don't matter what he did. Like, I saw a discourse with, like, well, why, you got to make an adjustment. Don't just blame Sengun for being bad in pick and roll. And it's like, the adjustment was come sit next to me.
Yeah, he took him off the floor. And I think it was Sam Vecenie who had the thread about it. It's like, okay, you took Sengun out, but you didn't play Uzma Garuba if you wanted more defense. Like, you, like, it is true that Sengun had very bad possessions defensively, as he has had for most of this season. It is true that high pick and rolls against Sengun were very fruitful for the Blazers, even outside of Dame. It is kind of hard to sell, we sat him down because of defense, and then you bring in Boban.
Do you know how bad it had to be?
Like, Steve is losing it.
I can't be respectfully messy. Just continue.
It's just like, okay, if you want more defensive versatility on the floor, play Uzma Garuba. Like, that wasn't going to solve Dame, especially after you had a 41-point first half. Like, he was just cooking. So, I mean, maybe it goes from Dame scores 58 instead of 41, or Dame scores 64 instead of 71, if you give Uzma more minutes. I don't think it materially changes who wins that game or anything like that, but, like, that's something. I think it's valid to question, at least question. Like, hey, what? Okay, so why Boban instead of Garuba? Or whatever. But, like, quiet as kept. Like, it was an 8-point game early in the fourth quarter. It went super left in the fourth. But anyway, back to Dame. The shot making has been absurd for so long. The pick and roll poise and the patience that he has can get to the pull up if it's in drop. You play him higher up, he can drive past your big if you're hedging. He can just split it and get to the rim. When he gets to the rim, he can finish through you, over you, around you, or just get to the free throw line and do some combination of the other three things. And if you divert too much attention, he can toss skip to the weak side. He can drop lay down passes for you. He's operating at such a level offensively.
It feels like all the things that he's worked on to add to his game are all coming together now.
At 32.
And it's insane to think coming off an injury, everything would just kind of pop and clip. We've seen the addition of the drive. We've seen the addition of, I'm going to make this skip pass. I'm going to be patient. We've seen the pull-ups, obviously. He's doing it all right now.
And as we talked about on the show, like how Chauncey Billups has used him off the ball to kind of kick off some stuff too. And so now you're just getting the blend of, I will just walk the ball up the floor and I will shoot over you. I will walk the ball up the floor and get to the rim. I will run a high pick and roll and do a combination of those two things. I will start in the corner as Anthony Simons brings the ball up and I will come off of this pin down. Or I will start at the wing. I will come off this loop. Have fun chasing me and then also not ending up on my hip to where I can immediately drive. I can pump fake and get you in the air and get free throws. I can pump fake, drive, snake, get to the rim. And if you divert too much attention to me, I will now drop this ball off to Drew Eubanks or whoever screened it for me. There does not seem to be an answer to Damian Lillard. There's only hope that he misses. There's only hope that his pass is off target or going out of bounds. Damian Lillard decides how good of a game that Damian Lillard is going to have. And that is a very fun thing to witness as a basketball fan, and especially as a Blazers fan. They had to be losing their minds watching their basketball. Some quick numbers I will throw out on the Dame thing. an 80.4 true shooting percentage in that game, making Dame's 71 performance against the Rockets the most efficient 70-point game in NBA history. And this is basically a month removed from him dropping 60 against the Utah Jazz with 89.8 true shooting percentage, with an 89.8 true shooting percentage, which was also the most efficient 60-plus point game in NBA history. He's averaging 39 points on 70.4 true shooting over his last 21 games. And I navigate 21 games because on January 6th against the Pacers, this was a game in which the Pacers lost. I mean, the Pacers beat the Blazers by 9 points. The Blazers missed, I think, their last 13 shots to close out that game. They were outscored by 10 in that fourth quarter. That is the last time that Damian Lillard scored under 20 points in a basketball game. Since then, he's basically averaging 40. And is doing so with high efficiency. And is doing so in multiple ways. On the ball, off the ball, drives, pull-ups, blowing off screens, pick and rolls, ISOs, getting busy in transition, relocating when someone else has the ball. He is on an entirely different plane of existence right now, offensively. And it is just fun to watch him play basketball. What really stinks about all of this is that Dame is in the middle of this stretch. The Blazers are torching the Nets. With Dame on the floor, offensive ratings over 124, which would be the highest mark in the NBA. Anyway, they are doing this. And the defense has not done enough to help the Blazers rack up games during this stretch. Like, the shot making is not only incredible, it's been needed. It's been needed.
I cannot believe you took Dame scoring 71 in a heroic fashion and brought it back to Portland's defense somehow.
Well, it's necessary. Because, like, if Dame was playing like this and Portland was, like, the 21st ranked defense during this stretch, like, they'd probably be a top six seed right now. Now they would be a top six seed right now. So it's just tough. Like, this is still very much about Dame and how incredible he's been. Like, I wrote about him a little bit earlier on basketballnews.com. Quick plug. Cited some of those numbers and more. Like, this is like the blend of usage and efficiency and also just not turning the ball over. Like, that stretch, like, that combination of things has not been seen in a season since Michael Jordan and Tracy McGrady. More 30-plus foot jumpers in the NBA in the stretch than just about anyone. And he's shooting 46% on those. Like, Dame has been, he's been a video game character. And the Rockets game, you know, kind of bounced off of what you said. It's a culmination of all the things that he's added over the last few years. And it's like, okay, what do you do with him? What can you do with Damian Lillard outside of pray that he misses? Or pray that there's like a blizzard as he's on a plane and that he's too tired to come play. Like, that's it. You can't defend him. You can't guard him.
So what you're saying is he is the player that will unite the box score boys and the calculator casuals.
Oh, goodness. He sure, you know. I don't know. He's averaging over 11 free throw attempts during this stretch. And, you know, free throws are bad. So I don't know. I don't know if that counts. At least that's what I'm being told with other scoring guards. I don't know.
Who do you mean?
Who
are you talking about?
Insert player who gets to the line here.
Can we be respectfully messed real quick? Why did Drew Eubanks do that to Sengun?
He sent that man to the shadow realm. That's so tough.
Ain't nobody, no fight, nothing. Also, how did Dame get a drug test that quickly?
That man had water and Gatorade poured on him after the game. That man was walking through the tunnel like, hey, Dame, can you come here for a minute?
No, we need the blood. The blood.
Before you get to the locker room, we're not going to take long. We need 5 minutes.
Oh,
man. They DK Metcalf that man. That's so tough.
That's wild.
That's kind of tough.
But this is where the fun of the NBA should be. Like, there's so much beautiful art being made, and we should be able to enjoy that and not be silly about it. Like, it's getting really fun. Everything's ramping up. Guys are playing at an insane level. Find what you like. It's there.
Yeah.
Some teams do all of it, but it's there.
They sure do. That's true.
Enjoy the game.
Why do that when you can complain about it? You know? Dead ball era. This is ugly basketball. You know, we get more spacing. Well, no. Now you're scoring too much. Stop it. I don't know. It's just, I don't know. Like, I never want to get to a place where, like, you're not allowed to criticize the thing that you like, because I think we should always strive to improve literally anything. So I've never wanted to get to that. But it does just feel like, and maybe this is just me consuming, like, what I consume in my timeline, being what it is or whatever. It just feels like there's so much more energy on, like, what's wrong and what's annoying versus these guys are hooping. Like, over this past weekend, you got literally anything you wanted to see. Insane shot making, exciting play in Kings Clippers, a half-court battle between the Suns and the Bucks, playoff level adjustments in chess match between two stars between the Sixers and the Celtics. Just a high one player just going all the way off with Dame. Like, what do you, even Nuggets Clippers, like, you got to see Jokic, just the different ways the Nuggets were trying to get to Jokic post up and how the Clippers were trying to deal with that. All right, we're going to stay attached. We're going to trust our big to deal with them. We're going to trust our big to deal with them. We're going to send some help. We're going to switch and we're going to front. We're going to switch front. We're going to double them on the catch. Like, even the stuff like that, you still get, you get defensive stuff, a bunch of in-game adjustments there. Offensively, you get a bunch of post-ups if you want to see that. Like, there's so much good basketball being played. And there are so many different styles of basketball being played. If you don't like how a team goes about their business offensively or defensively, you can simply turn to a different team that is doing the things that you enjoy. It's all there. And rent for me. That's all I got. I'll concede the floor to you. I feel like I've talked a lot. You want any shout outs you want to give? This would normally be the teams that impress, teams that whatever, but talk a lot about the weekends. So anybody you want to shout out?
How about those Bulls? Held Brooklyn and Washington to 80 points. I said Patrick Beverley was going to bring something. You might have brought the Bulls back. Playing defense. Who knew? It was just, hey, you and Alex Caruso, just do all that stuff. We'll take care of this end. Y'all do that. It will make it work. Zach LaVine looking refreshed. Maybe he helped them out. Maybe he just needed a friend.
Maybe he just needed a friend. Finally, someone to tell me to shoot the basketball. Where has this been all year? A subtle chuckle out of seeing, like, okay, what is Zach LaVine doing after the Pat Bev quote? 6 assists in 2 games. Like, oh, okay.
Nah, I'm enabled now. Now we hit Vooch down low posting. No, we scrambling, rotating. They ended the hipster Nets real quick.
Man, I mean, it also doesn't help that the Nets just missed literally everything in that first half. But no, the Bulls were swarming. They were swarming. Also, Steve, if you remember on the pod last week, I did drop that at that time anyway, the Thunder were the best offense in the NBA in 2023. The Chicago Bulls, the best defense in the NBA this calendar year.
All right, so considering how you feel about the Bulls' defense, that should invalidate your Thunder stat, sir.
What does that mean?
We've been doing this pod for 2 years. You ain't had a compliment for the Bulls' defense one.
What you mean? Yes, I have. I had last year, I had questions about how that defense was going to do, and I immediately said, you know what? I was wrong. Caruso's been incredible. Lonzo's been incredible. They forcing turnovers. They getting out in transition. I got to take my L. Then everybody got hurt. And I was like, well, that's kind of unfortunate. They ended up like 6th or 7th or whatever. Not the way I thought they would. They just got hurt. They were the 1 seed at one point. I had to take my L on that. Chicago's defense has been good all year. The offense has just been the offense has not.
Girl, we did it. Girl.
Unbelievable. But no, shout out to the Chicago Cold Bulls.
My other shout out, the Knicks.
Here we go.
Hey, that starting lineup is 16-8. Just keeping an eye on it. And Josh Hart's giving them balance. They're scoring. They're defending. Julius Randle's playing pretty well. They're making some moves. So just keeping an eye on them. And then Klay Thompson. This man has made 4 or more threes in 5 straight games. The month of February, he's shooting 45.5% from 3 on 12 attempts a game. Since January 25th, he's made 73 threes in 13 games.
That's insane. He has really stepped up in Steph's absence.
Buddy, look. And look at the Warriors. Just hanging around. In the 7 seed. Half a game out of 6. A game and a half out of 4.
Of course.
You know, yeah, number 30. He coming back soon.
Come back at some point, yeah.
Oh, the West is going to be nasty, man. It's going to be nasty.
It's going to be nasty indeed. So, like, first, a shout out to Klay, who has been incredible. Like, he's just been Golden State's best player during the stretch. And this is with him having – it's funny because you note the three-point stats and how wild they are. And there have been some absolutely terrible shooting performances mixed into this. And so it really signifies, like, how wild he's been. Like, I say that, like – what was it? The Laker game, I want to say, that he just could not hit anything. And so you sprinkle that in, and you're still shooting, what, north of 40% for 3 on 12 attempts? Like, he's been on an absolute heater. Also, yet another player that just, whenever he sees Houston on the schedule, it's like, all right, bet it's go time. I have takeover the second that I walk in here. It's wild. But no, like, he's done the thing. Jordan Poole starting to find it. And they have needed him to find it. Waiting on 30 to come back. I think Draymond Green, last I saw, MRI came back clean. I think he may be playing at some point this week. I hope everything is okay with Andrew Wiggins and his family. He's been out for personal reasons for a little bit now. And so the Warriors have been trying to patch it together with some of the wing minutes. But as you said, they are hanging around. And at full strength, all they needed to do, like we've had the conversation on the pod before, like we know what they can be. It's just where they're going to be standing wise by the time they get to full strength and get things together, if they ever do. For them to be within striking distance of home court still, they've held it together in a way that I didn't think they would. So they deserve their props. And Klay Thompson absolutely deserves his props for what he's been able to do. 3-point record was in jeopardy with that Dame game on Sunday. Dame could not do it. Klay still holding on to the record.
That man was trying, though.
Yeah, he sure was. Shout out to Houston saying, absolutely not. No. No, no, no. We ain't just at the level. No, we are doubling you. No.
Oh, snap. And then who do you got? Who you want to shout out, man?
Ah, I see. Well, I would like to shout out the Charlotte Hornets, who have won their last 4 games. They have the 4th best defense in the NBA over that stretch. And they have the 4th best defensive rating during this stretch. And that includes a 144-138 win over the Hawks within that win streak. So, you know, rest of the wins, not against great offenses. San Antonio's mixed in there. Miami's mixed in there. And that was a Miami game on the second night of a back-to-back. So that certainly helps the numbers. But I have enjoyed the effort ramping up for Charlotte. And I know Steve Clifford is very pleased with the effort ramping up for Charlotte. We haven't done a rookie report in a minute, but I do want to give some love to Mark Williams, who has been very good on both ends since he's entered the starting lineup. He started the last 6 games during this 4-game win streak, averaging 13 points, 10 boards, a pair of blocks. Just his presence inside. 7'2", long wingspan. He's just a massive human being. But what that does, it gives Charlotte someone to funnel the ball to. Funnel drives inside to. And for what their point of attack defense is, at least within the starters, like they've just needed someone that defense have to worry about a little bit. And Mark Williams, especially for a rookie, still kind of wading his way through it. Like, he's looked pretty solid defensively. He's looked pretty solid positionally as well. Still some stuff to navigate in short areas in the drop. Kind of get the hips turned. They don't turn very quickly. Like, there was an in and out in the Wolves game where Ant really froze him. He couldn't turn around at all. I ended up clipping that one. It's like, not ideal, but every big has their weakness. So, you know, not too much on Mark Williams. But beyond that, what he's doing offensively, as we talked about, I had some concerns with some of the early reps we saw in Summer League. Like, okay, what is the finishing going to be like? If he isn't going to do that, then what does this mean? Screening has perked up. The finishing and the catching of the ball has perked up a little bit for him. I've enjoyed that. But what he does on the offensive glass, I think, also allows Steve Clifford to kind of have his cake and eat it too, in a way. Because generally under Steve Clifford, his teams aren't crashing the glass, the offensive glass, all that often. Very much wants to get back, wants to prioritize transition defense. And Mark Williams being able to create extra possessions by himself without having to allocate extra resources for that allows them to get some extra offensive possessions where they've been blasting away from three, both before the miss and afterwards. I've liked what he's kind of brought as a neutralizer in the middle. What's up? You are making a face.
Oh, no, you're good. Keep going.
Oh, okay. I was like, oh, no, what have I done?
But no, you're good. You're good. Okay. I'm concerned about humanity when it comes to Jokic and Embiid.
Ah, I see. You have seen some nonsense. Fair enough.
We'll save for free throws. Keep going, man. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Well, beyond Mark Williams, as I said in the last pod, I'm keeping an eye on LaMelo and what it looks like on the interior, what the defensive effort is looking like. Defensive efforts look a little bit better over the last four. Inside the arc, still working his way through it, still not getting to the line a bunch. But north of 40% from three, over 10 attempts on those threes. You really can't play drop against them. He's very comfortable flowing in transition. He's knocked down a bunch of big shots. Gordon Hayward, over this four-game stretch, 22.5 points, shooting over 61% from the field. Also getting to the line when necessary. Like, he is just a metronome inside the arc, particularly around the elbow areas. Like, watching him just kind of snake around, get to the elbow, rise up, it's just easy for him. He's provided some tough stuff, provided some tough shots for Charlotte, some very crucial buckets late in games. We saw him knock down some big shots in the Miami game as well. Nice to see Kelly Oubre back. Gonna wait for the sample to grow for him. But it's nice to see him flying around on defense again. Just got back from the wrist surgery. I did not know he was playing again this year. Like, the timeline would make me believe that he was coming back, but where Charlotte was record-wise, and considering, like, he's an unrestricted free agent, I thought this was very much going to be let me make sure I'm good for the summer. So it's just nice to see him on the court. Dennis Smith Jr. still flying around defensively. He's been a monster at the point of attack all year long, or when he's been on the court. So that's been fun. PJ Washington filling gaps, knocking down shots, scoring efficiently. It's just been a fun stretch for the Charlotte Hornets, and they've needed a fun stretch of on-court stuff for a while. And so while they are currently winning, again, it's four games. They may lose the next six. I don't know. I want to give them their flowers while I can. This has been a good stretch of basketball for them. You already hit on the Bulls, so I won't hang too long. I had Pat Bev on my list. Like, as cliche as it is, he has really injected a lot of life into the Bulls. Just yelling at people after getting fouled or committing a foul, amping the Chicago fan base up. There was a possession in the Nets game. Very simple thing. I think it was Vooch gets a board. Pat Bev looked like he was ready to jump out of his skin, hoping to get an outlet so he can go ahead and push the pace. Quickly swings at Alex Caruso. Alex Caruso Euro steps, gets a layup. And like, I don't know if that should have been an assist for Pat Bev, but that's neither here nor there. But beyond that, it's just like, that's the kind of freneticism that he wants to bring. Like, let's go, let's get after it, let's get downhill, let's go. And like, that was kind of the quiet part of what he brought to Minnesota last year. To where, you know, it kind of stood out during that Grizzly series in the first round. Where, like, Ja got that assignment and Pat Bev was just getting paint touches basically whenever he wanted to. But like, Pat Bev adds a level of like snappiness in the half court. Like, ball swings to him, he's flinging it or he is driving and he's going to the next option. It's not a lot of catch and hold. And I think for what the Bulls have been offensively, we've talked about it, just having that level of decisiveness helps. I was surprised when it was announced he was starting that first game and Patrick Williams going to the bench. I was like, wait, why are we doing this? Like, that's less size. I've liked Pat Williams' defense, like the aggression in terms of the shooting from the perimeter that's perked up. Why that? But like, there's just a difference in how quick the decisions are being made with Pat Bev versus Patrick Williams. That may not always be the case, but I think Billy Donovan recognized we need a little bit more of that. offensively. I don't think talent's the issue with Chicago's offense. It's very much, how are these players being set up? How quickly are they making decisions? And I think Pat Bev has done a good job of adding a boost there. And Michael Porter Jr. is the last guy I want to shout out. The jumper is easy to talk about. Averaging 17 points, 5 boards, 41% from 3 over this season. As I was doing research for the Dame piece that I mentioned a little bit earlier, he's one of the 5 guys over the past month and a half that's shooting over 40% from 3 while taking at least 8 threes. So very much a flamethrower. Open catch and shoots, he'll get it going. Come off a screen, he'll get it going. Shot contests do not matter against him. That's what makes him so fun as a shot maker. The defense is what's been popping for me, though, with Michael Porter Jr. And it's not popping in a bad way. And we saw like remnants of this last year, or especially when they first acquired Aaron Gordon, to where, okay, he's starting to get it. He isn't all the way there. He's going to have to prove it in the playoffs, but he's starting to get it. This year, and especially over this recent run of games, like, it really feels like he's just nailing the weak side. He is peeling in when he needs. He is contesting at the rim when he needs. Like, with his size and with his frame, like, screen navigation is always going to be a bit of an issue for him. But, like, the effort isn't a problem anymore. For what Denver's defensive scheme is, he's at the point, and I hope I don't end up regretting this like a month or so from now, but he's at the point where I just trust him on the floor defensively. He's very much, this is his job. He is doing it. I don't worry about him. What's everyone else doing? And that's a big spot for him to get to. And that's all he needed to get to defensively, because the offense itself, we don't need to talk about it. Space, cut, occasional post up, tough shot making, getting into the clock. He can do all that stuff. He just needed to get to a level defensively to where he's trustworthy. Didn't have to be elite. Didn't even have to be very good. He had to be trustworthy. I think he's gotten to trustworthy. And it's been fun to watch his evolution this year. As Jamal Murray has come back and taken more on-ball reps, he's had to kind of adjust the types of shots that he's getting as he's kind of shifted back to third. And with Aaron Gordon getting some of those duck-ins, some of those flashes that you've talked about with the post-ups, he's getting more touches. So sometimes MPJ is just fourth in the pecking order. He's had to adjust to that on the fly, and he's done a good job, and he's still scoring at a high level and scoring efficiently, and the defense has come along with it too. Really proud of what I'm seeing from him. I think that concludes my list.
No, I like the MPJ shot because he's doing his job, and that adds a whole different element, especially for this Nuggets team as they improve. They need him to do that, and he's done it time and time again, which is different than when he's getting buckets and wait, what's happening? So I'm glad you pointed that out. Do you have free throws?
I do have free throws. Do
you? I'm gonna go first.
Okay.
I'm reordering my things. I don't have that many. Sorry, folks. Between Jokic and Embiid, who's waffles and who's pancakes? Look, buddy, I'm sick. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of this debate. I'm sick of this argument. I'm sick of this conversation. I'm sick of this dialogue. I'm so tired of it. Hey, man. Do not project your insecurities into a basketball discourse. The dumbest thing in the world. It's just like analytics 2.0. What are you talking about? Dog, I put a Jokic clip up from the game last night because I was like, LOL, what a crazy shot he made. Why don't I see this one in Embiid? He's not playing right now. What would you like me to do? Create a time machine and go back to the Sixers game and then post a clip at the same time this is happening? Stop talking. Shut up. Shut up. They're both very good at basketball, insanely good at basketball in different ways. Why are you trying to compare them with the same tired arguments? What are we doing? Well, what about all these advanced stats and all? What about defense? What are you talking about? Can you, Joel Embiid supporter, tell me what Nikola Jokic is good at? Can you, Jokic supporter, tell me what Joel Embiid is good at? If you can't, don't talk to me about it anymore. Go yell at each other. This is so dumb.
It's true. Pretty true.
Breaking
news. That's why Giannis is the MVP. No.
Breaking news. Nerlens Noel and the Detroit Pistons have completed a contract buyout.
Ah, that's intriguing. The deadline for buyouts to be eligible for playoff games is March the 1st. So getting that done today. So today and tomorrow, Tuesday, I think it'll be the last 2 days. I need to see if it's like a March 1st by 3 p.m. Eastern, or if it's like genuinely like 11:59 on February 28th, what the deadline is. I have to get some clarity on that. But at any rate, Nerlens Noel was waived before the deadline. So even if he signed like 2 weeks from now, he is eligible to play in the playoffs. any early Nerlens Noel suitor.
Where are you going, Dallas or Golden State?
That feels like Dallas. JaVale, we appreciate everything you've done for this game. They gave that man years. That's so tough.
Yeah. Anyways, are you ready for Spurs Rockets twice this weekend?
I mean, low key. Let's see how Kelvin. Also, Malachi Branham hooping.
Okay. They've lost 16 straight games.
They have. But Malachi Branham hooping.
They're only a half game ahead of Houston.
That's true. There's probably going to be some nasty taking. We may see more Boban. However, Malachi Branham hooping.
Did you see the Diddy stare down between the Iowa coach and the ref?
No, I didn't.
You didn't see that?
I did not. My Iowa content was Caitlin Clark hitting the game winner, coming off of a stagger in which. How do you not have a switch set up in that situation? Why is a big and a you are down, you are up two. Caitlin Clark is the player getting the basketball. And you say, you know what? It's your job to navigate this screen. Best of luck. Save the game for us.
Only you would get mad at the process behind that. That's just an insane shot.
It is an insane shot. She shouldn't even been open. Make her make that insane shot over a contest.
I mean, there was one. She fell down, but it's kind
of
wild.
Yeah, the weight of the world was literally on that girl's shoulders. And then she tripped, and now Caitlin Clark just gets a jumper.
All right.
It's not that defender's fault. Like, I want to be clear about that. I'm not saying it's unfortunate she tripped. Obviously, that stinks. But, like, it would have been nice if she also had some relief. Like, hey, let's get the big up to the level. If we go the slip behind it, we're just playing extra basketball. I'm not giving Caitlin, if I can help it, I am not purposely scheme-wise just allowing her to come off of it. No. I'm sorry. Continue.
No, you're good. You're good, man. Shout out to South Carolina. Shout out to the UNLV Lady Rebels. 18 dubs in a row.
There you go.
Take that, UConn. Anyways, do you have free throws?
It's going to sprinkle that one in there. Okay. All right. Yeah, I do have some free throws. Josh Okogie is averaging 18 and a half points while shooting 49% from three on over six attempts sent over his last, I think, six games. Has he earned the fifth spot over Torrey Craig yet?
No.
Okay.
But he's earned himself some dollars. I'll tell you that much.
Okay. Fair enough. Better all NBA case right now. Pascal Siakam or Kawhi Leonard?
Kawhi.
Okay. Sticking with the all NBA theme, De'Aaron Fox or Drew Holiday?
Ooh. That's nasty work.
Yeah, I had some fun in my mentions today.
What were you doing?
Someone asked me, like, hey, what would your all NBA guards be? I was like, oh, well, these are the six that I have right now. I'm working on an article for it, but this is what I have right now. And so I listed my six, and it was just like, hey, what about De'Aaron? I was like, you know what? That's pretty true. That's these are good cases. What about Drew? Like, yeah, you know, that's true. He has a good case as well.
Hey, this is gonna be unpopular, but it might be 0-2. Lucas, Steph, Josh, Shea, Donovan, Dame. I can't. The two people who scored 71 points are going to get recognized. I'm sorry.
I mean, that's true.
So, who should have a better case? That's nasty. Drew.
Drew, okay.
Sorry, De'Aaron. Having a hell of a year.
That's fair. And I did have, like, rough drive. I had Steph as a third-team guard because all the time he's missed. So, I guess we'll see.
Oh, no. We're back on this season. Let me check the games played. Steph's going to get no recognition at the end of the
year. I'm just saying. He's like right. I think the cutoff right now is like 36 games. And he's like right there. Okay. And so that's why he's still on the team right now. But okay. Like next up, De'Aaron has a really good case. Drew has a really good case. Harden has a really good case. Like Kyrie also has a good case. Like there's a lot of Darius Garland has been really good this year. Like it's a very deep guard class. It's like 9 or 10 for six spots. Like it's tough. we're gonna have to split hair somewhere. Anyway, last all NBA thing I have, Julius Randle or Jimmy Butler?
That is tough. I can't even use games played. That's not even my bit. I gotta go Julius right now.
Okay. Who closes more games for the rest of the season?
Aaron RJ.
Gordon. Oh, wow. Okay.
What was the question?
Okay. Who closes more games the rest of the season? Russell Westbrook or RJ Barrett?
Ooh. Oh, buddy. Ooh. I don't know how I feel about that, Nikias.
Just asking questions.
Just asking questions, he says. I'm gonna go Russ.
Okay. Kind of tough, but all right. Who do you have more faith in moving forward? The Lakers or the Warriors?
It's still the Warriors for me.
Okay. Would you have even more faith in Mason Plumlee if he was on the Wizards?
What do you mean more faith?
Ah, I think that answers that. Okay. more fed up with their defense, Jason Kidd or Steven Silas?
Steven Silas by default.
Okay. Who's more fed up, period? Rocket fans or Steven Silas?
Rocket fans.
Okay.
By far, easily.
All right. Would you say that Steven Silas is not doing what he's supposed to do? Okay, last one I have for you.
Bleacher. No, they said that man was reading from a script. Huh?
Yeah, they've been very upset with him. Again, anyway. I feel for Steven. Bleacher Reports, Eric Pincus mentioned the NBA is considering the Elam ending.
No.
For overtime games. Which,
no.
Okay.
No.
You don't like it for overtime.
Side note, I love that they just rebanded it. I was like, nope, target score. Nice idea, though. But it's the, nope, it's a target score. I don't know what you got going on over there. We do a target score. And as soon as we get a sponsor for it, you're out of here, pal.
That's a tad bit unfortunate. Oh, man.
I mean, I get it in theory. If you're one who subscribes to overtime games, really aren't that great. Because there is like a 2-minute lull usually. Either nothing happens or Team X goes off and it's like, ah.
Oh, we just gotta wait this out, huh?
But nah, I'm cool. Let the time play.
Okay.
Although if it eliminates foul up three, I might reconsider. Then what y'all gonna talk about now? I probably do foul up eight or something if there's a target score. Well, you see, if you foul now, you go. Oh, jeez.
I mean, you can't cut the deficit with the extra point with threes if you're on the free throw line. If you foul a bad free throw shooter, you may be able to.
Oh, then absolutely not then, because these games just take 98 minutes. Oh, no. Lord, no.
Oh, jeez. I guess last one for me, now that I think about it. Jamal Murray said that Bones Highland is a good kid. He's going to have a great career. Do you believe him?
I believe what he said after that.
Ah, I see. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. You can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community. We are having fun discussions in there. Join the online Dunker Spot watch parties where there's plenty of analysis, plenty of antics. And also Steve cutting wrestling promos to Mason Plumlee diving for loose balls. So if you have not joined, I will have the link in the podcast episode description. If it's hyperlinked, you just click on that, enter your info. It's all free. No antics, no bits. Get in there, have some fun, watch some basketball with us. If not, just hold down, copy and paste the link, put it in your browser, get the app if necessary. Hassle fun with us. Either way, join us, hassle fun. We are having a blast in there. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
This man, I wrote 8 articles on Dame this year.